Hello, good people of the internet. This is Hear the Walking Dead, an unofficial podcast about AMC's Fear the Walking Dead. I'm Stephen Bueno.
Christian Cabrera.
Josh Ogrijalva.
Cornell Montgomery.
All right. And if this is your first episode, what we do is we review the current week's episode of Fear the Walking Dead. We talk all about the major plot points and maybe even give some predictions as to what's going to go on in the next episode. This week, we'll be talking about the third episode titled The Dog. If you missed the first two episodes, feel free to go on over to filmbook.com. That's film-book.com. And you can check out the first two podcasts we've done. Also, if you want to send us an email and just ask us about or just let us what you think and ask us a couple of questions, go ahead and send us an email at podcast@film-book.com with Hear the Walking Dead in the subject line, and we'll make sure to either give you a shout out or talk about some of the things that you feel like we might have missed. So guys, for this week, one of the first things we're going to talk about is the initial riot and how incredibly chaotic and just really cool that whole scene was, man. Oh, yeah. So the last episode, one of the last things that happened is Travis and the first family at least, was stuck. They got stuck in the middle of almost like a protest against police brutality that turned into an all-out riot, as those tend to do, I guess. And they got stuck in a barbershop with another family, and they were kind of wondering what they were going to do. So we were all kind of wondering where that would go. And I think the writers took them out of that room pretty creatively.
Yeah, that was pretty cool how they did it. I mean, there was a fire that started in the room next door. Mm-hmm. Son touched his hand to it, and he's like, it's heating up. We need to get out. They opened the door and people started coming in and destroying stuff. So,
was anyone kind of afraid that that might have been their, that the show might have gotten stuck there for a little while?
Yeah, I definitely thought the show was going to be there for a couple episodes.
I honestly saw that they needed to get out of there to at least transition something else because it did feel like they had small little writer block for a second there.
Well, the thing is, like, the show's been going on a little faster than The Walking Dead, or like the pacing at least for the show has been a little quicker than The Walking Dead, and I love that a whole lot because The Walking Dead had that issue where it became stagnant after a while, whether they got stuck doing whatever they were doing, and it was a lot more about character development. This one's a lot more about world development, and you see the focus switch. I mean, yeah, obviously the family, but you see the focus switch more towards the zombie world and the new rules in the zombie world and how the zombie world comes up.
And I feel like one thing I noticed was, or thought about actually, was that it feels like this should be a miniseries. I don't want them to draw it out because if they keep it going, it could just turn into The Walking Dead. I mean, where are they going to go past a certain amount of days and it's just going to be them surviving versus the outbreak happening and the stories of the outbreak?
Well, I mean, at that point, it could just become like a spinoff series where they could just focus on those characters' storylines rather than focusing
a spinoff.
Yeah, right. Isn't that something? Like, just pretty much focus on that, those characters' storylines, much rather than going on to the same ones that they have on The Walking Dead right now. They could even have them like cross over into The Walking Dead.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, I've said it before, I really wanted it to just be almost its own separate universe because I like how different it is. And in The Walking Dead, you never saw crowds of people really, except for, when they were in, name of the town, what was it?
Which one, Alexandria? Or
before.
Or before that
Terminus.
One?
There you go. When they were, even before that.
Even before Terminus, when they were at the governor's one, I forgot what it was called.
Oh, like, I don't know. Shit. Governor's place.
it's been place so long, there. But it's yeah, cool. Like, it's like Alexandria, you do see a bit of a crowd of people, and then Terminus, you saw those cannibals, and then prior to that,
just normal people living in a town.
Yeah. And but in The Walking Dead, you never saw these crowds, and you never saw really people going about their day. It was always a small group trying to survive. And in Fear of the Walking Dead, you are seeing these like multitudes, and especially when it came to the rioting, you saw everyone losing their minds, obviously, and then you saw the police officer getting eaten by the other one that was clearly infected, and
nobody knows,
no one acknowledged it. No one did. I thought that was incredibly horrifying because it's in front of everyone's eyes and no one can see it.
Mm-hmm. It's just going to set it up for bigger things in the future, obviously, when you'll start noticing that you'll see more like zombies start popping out, and obviously it's gonna get a lot more hectic now that they have the military coming out and all that stuff.
And well, it did kind of show after the zombie was eating a cop, it showed like another scene where a cop was eating another person and transitioned out to leaving the city. So I mean, it's already happening. People are, I mean, cops are already turning that quick because it had to have been within a short period of time. I'm not saying it's the same cop, but it's a cop in that situation.
Yeah, that, and that's kind of what I'm wondering now, how fast the infection is going,
yeah,
or how deadly he was attacked, because before quick. It took them a while to turn, and this cop was part of the initial conflict. So if he was there and within a couple of hours he turned, either he was shot, killed, or something had happened.
Well, they kind of did give it like a time, or at least how long they were inside the room. They were like, it's been like 2 hours or something like that, so... I don't know how long that other cop was bitten and how long it took for him to turn, but it does seem like it takes a lot less time in this one. Like, people turn right off the bat, so.
And then, what I thought was very interesting is while the riot is going on and Travis is stuck with his original family and his second family, family 2.0, is what I'm calling him now, with Miranda and the kids, Family 2.0 is playing Monopoly inside their home. And at least while the riot was going on, you saw this like very chaotic scene with Travis. And then with Miranda, you saw her keeping peace. And I like that the show uses both those characters to kind of juxtapose two different either ideologies or two different moods. One is like chaos in the city, and the other one is people trying to remain calm and try to keep it...
More like in denial, you could say.
Almost, but she's trying to keep a sense of normality, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, also, they're still keeping the daughter in the blue, so they're really trying to keep a sense of
normality. Oh, yeah, she's really trying to hide from Alicia that... because Nick, Miranda, and Travis all had that experience with Nick's friend, and they already kind of know. I'm not exactly... Well, I was going to say I'm not exactly sure why they want to keep it from Alicia, but I guess it makes sense because... her boyfriend got infected, and she doesn't know that he's going to end up that way.
Surprised they didn't address that.
They really did it.
They did. She said, I hope, or no, he can't be that way or something like that after she found out. But, I mean, they sort of addressed it.
They mentioned it, but.
But, I mean, they're not going to go and visit him.
It's not really a big, like, plot key, you know, in the entire show. But
yeah, not really on that one.
Now,
it's one of those loose ends.
One of the cool things. When they were leaving the riot was when we were checking out the when we got to see the hospital and how they had it quarantined off, and you could still see the police force and the authority like figures still attempting to contain whatever's happening, and headshots. You are seeing headshots.
Oh yeah, they're aware. The military knows how to take them down, and it's kind of crazy though because they're trying to keep it quarantined, but I mean people were going past and they're seeing what's going on, and. It's cool to think that a lot of those people in the hospital have died in turn that quick. And they know hospitals are like the place you don't want to be at. So the military's doing their job.
I did like, because through Travis is what you're seeing happening to the city. And through Miranda is what you're seeing happening in the neighborhoods. So then you switch back to Miranda, who's at the house. And the daughter, I think it's the daughter initially, Alicia, that looks out the window and sees and says, hey, something's going on in the neighbor's house again. And that's when they start hearing the dog, where I think the title of the episode comes from. And they hear like a rustling in the door, or like a sound at the door. They open it and they let a dog in. And that's when
the neighbor.
Patrick. Mm-hmm. There you go. Patrick is a little bit after that. They see the dog, and then they decide, they see Patrick outside. He wasn't in the house just yet. They see Patrick outside, the neighbor, and then they figure, you know what? We can go to the house next door and take their gun. Because as Nick did, I guess he mentions, he tried to steal their gun once.
Yeah.
Because face it, Nick's kind of an a-hole at one point, you know? So I loved the, I guess you could call it the cinematography when they go into the neighbor's house. Because that lighting... it reminded me a lot of like 2001 Space Odyssey, where like very, very Kubrick, very, at least just the lighting in general. Yeah. And that's what reminded me a whole lot. Very
dim.
Yeah. And it added to the suspense because you were supposed to feel like on pins and needles in that whole scene. That's exactly what I felt, because you didn't know what happened to the neighbors. Nothing looked out of place. There didn't seem to be a fight. And I thought there was going to be a jump scare when they were looking through the house.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. The show does a lot of lead-ons, and you really expect things to happen, but it is actually pretty unpredictable.
Yeah.
And I like that because we're walking off of a walking, we're going off of The Walking Dead and how you know that this character is going to be in this situation, this is what's going to happen. But in this, you mean you put him into an empty house and you're just expecting someone to pop up and nothing happens.
Yes.
And when they get back to, you know, the home, you know, then things happen and you're like, okay, it's kind of moving forward, but you don't expect the next thing. So,
yeah, especially since the outbreak is just starting. So you just expect there to be random, like, zombies. Everywhere. Exactly.
Yeah.
Just never know what could happen.
We kind of miss over the fact that while when they're leaving the city, Griselda gets injured. She gets crushed, like her ankle gets crushed by
the wife of the wife. Daniel, mm-hmm. the owner of the barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
She gets injured, so they have to keep her in the home and kind of take care of her. And the whole time they're there, Daniel, which is her husband, is the one that's thinking more level-headed. He's aware of what's going on. He's like, okay, we need to take action. We need to do this. We need to do that. You know, yes. While everyone else is like, no, it's just a sickness. We got to just leave. You know?
Travis seems to really have that in his head of we got to help them out. And I think you mentioned it before. The thing that one of the best lines in the episode was that good people are the first ones to die. And it's great that I don't think he necessarily means that the people themselves will die. I think he means the kindheartedness in people, the altruistic nature of people will die, mm-hmm. and then people will turn into something different. Like they'll still be alive, but there'll be someone completely different. People's humanity, essentially.
Yeah, and I mean, exactly. The naive are the ones that will get taken quick. Because remember when Travis first got back to the house when Patrick was in there, he's trying to talk to him and be like, "Look, you're sick. We can help you. We can help you." And that didn't help at all. Of course, you know, he's a zombie. He's just going to keep coming after him. And when they get into the house, when Nick's family comes into the house, they have the gun and they're ready to shoot, but he just couldn't do it. So Daniel had to take the gun and put matters into his own hands because he couldn't trust Travis to do something.
That's the thing. Like, and what's cool is that you see Miranda honestly wanting to shoot the guy, but Travis gets in her way. Yeah. So it's almost like Miranda is aware of what has to be done and Travis doesn't necessarily want to let her do it. Yeah. He still thinks like, well, almost like the very naive character in every zombie apocalypse movie are like, no, these people are just sick and there's we can help them. And Miranda's like, no. I've seen what these people, like what these like creatures can do.
I'm going to correct you on that one, Steven. It's Madison.
What did I keep telling her?
Miranda.
Miranda.
I keep calling her Miranda. Yeah. Oh, whatever. Madison, anyway. Maddie, because that's what he calls her. But she does have that sort of mentality of I'll do whatever needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And Travis keeps stopping her. At every point, he keeps stopping her. And that's even later on in the episode. Like, I'll fast forward a little bit.
Yeah.
Later on in the episode, there's a very, like, interesting scene where Miranda tells Liza.
Madison.
Damn it, he keeps saying Miranda.
Yeah, he keeps saying
Madison. Where Madison keeps telling Liza, who's Travis's ex-wife, he tells her, hey, if I ever turn into that zombie, because there's a zombie in the backyard, which we'll explain in a bit.
Yeah.
But she's looking at her and tells her, hey, if I ever turn into that, do me in. Like, you have my permission to kill me because I don't want to be what that is. And that's essentially her acknowledging that these aren't humans anymore.
At the same time, she's also saying that so that her husband doesn't have to, her boyfriend doesn't have to take her out. I mean, you're taking out your loved one, that's pretty much going to break your spirit.
Well, yeah, she notices that he can't even take out the neighbor just because he knew him. Like, exactly. What makes you think he can take out, you know, he's no Carl, you know?
Yeah.
He's no Carl.
Which is a dang shame, right?
Yeah, it'll devastate him if he did that.
One of the most suspenseful scenes was the second time they go back into the neighbor's house, though.
When the daughter goes
in. Daughter
the daughter goes in the alone. Yeah. And then that's the scene that I initially thought it was going to be. When they first go into the house, that's sort of what I expected. But I love that the lights had already gone out throughout the city, and they come back on when she's in that house alone. And she sees the neighbor lady, Susan. She's already turned. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that there's a door covering her, and all you can see is her feet. And that's enough to horrify you. Because... Mm-hmm. And you're just seeing it through Alicia's eyes where she's panicked and she's incredibly afraid. She doesn't know what's going on because she doesn't really know the zombies yet. She has an idea, and then for this all to happen with her being there alone, well, I think she has more than just an idea right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she knows what's going on now.
And actually, I think she was the one that missed out on Patrick dying, so she didn't even see Patrick as a zombie. That her first encounter with a zombie is with Susan.
With Susan, yeah.
Well, Patrick had died.
No, but seeing it.
Oh, yeah, she doesn't. She doesn't see it
at all. So her first encounter is getting attacked, and then while she's pulling away, what's this, the son's name?
Chris.
Chris is the one that's trying to help, tries to help her.
Family 1.0.
Yeah, and she attacks him. It seems like it's just a big dysfunctional group that doesn't play well together. For some reason, they all don't like each other, or it seems like they don't like each other for no reason. They got to understand that, like, we're all in this together. We have no choice, and they just... Not feeling it.
Technically, there is a reason. That's why he's divorced that one. Yeah. But I have no idea if they're ever gonna mention what caused the separation.
Well, remember how I said, like, yeah, I believe in the first or second episode that it's a bunch of teenage angst, and that's what it seems like.
Yeah.
Dad, no. Yeah. Let me do this, Dad. And he just, I don't know.
Well, I think one of the reasons why they don't like each other is just because, you know, their parents are separated and now they're with different people. So it's just kind of like that angst of overprotection maybe of their own parents. Mm-hmm. That's probably one of the reasons why. I mean, it only makes sense.
Liza sort of does hint at it when she tells Travis, like, hey, I always knew I could do it. She says, I could always do something. And Travis is like, I always believed in you. Like, no, you always said you believed in me. And I think that's going to be something. This episode is very, it's very anti-Travis. In the subtext, really. It's sort of like, you want to be the leader and you want to be put in a position to help people, but you're not very effective. Or at least from my point of view.
When it comes down to it.
Yeah, because there's two camps of thinking here. There's two different camps. There's Travis and his good nature, and then there's Madison and I will do whatever it takes to protect my family. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be built up. And I feel like when the paths diverged at the end of the episode, that was sort of symbolic of the two different mentalities.
Oh, yeah.
Although what Madison was going to do was essentially help a neighbor.
But one thing I thought was one of the coolest scenes in the episode wasn't even involving zombies or anything like that. It's when the next morning, after Patrick had already finished, you know, being buried, Travis walks out and takes his trash still to the front. And then he sees his neighbor put the trash out, too. Yeah. And they just kind of look at each other like, it's just another normal day. And, you know, not knowing that a bunch of stuff is happening around him, actually probably aware that a bunch of stuff is happening around him, just trying to keep everything normal.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's that sense of normalcy. Like when you're saying with the Monopoly thing, like they want things to be okay, even though they're completely aware it's not.
And then as soon as he starts taking out the garbage, we see two cargo choppers. Military choppers that actually pass right over him. Which you can start seeing that, okay, their military is there. They're trying to actually settle the situation.
The military is mobilizing.
Yeah.
Well, like they say in every zombie apocalypse, when the military came, that's when things really, really go downhill. So that means things are at the worst it can be at the moment.
It means the police can't do even a thing about it.
No, I mean, they're getting eaten up. Yeah. So
cop got overrun. I'm pretty sure because it keeps going back to that cop because I feel like that one scene is very important because it says a lot in that, well, that person had armor and was there to protect someone. What happened to that guy?
Yeah.
And the fact that he has that uniform on and he goes, gets turned and attacks someone else. Mm-hmm. It's almost like saying, well, this virus and this epidemic has already infiltrated your authority and your systems. It's going to bring you down.
Yeah, there is no system anymore.
Yeah. Yep.
It does not care who you are.
Yeah, and then not only that, since now that it's the following day that that's when they're ready to go and pack and when they're ready to leave, then you see them, they start mobilizing. They actually leave the actual house.
Oh, and that's when in the car, remember, was it Nick is talking to his mom, like, I need more pills. Oh, yeah, I don't medicine, feel good. I need more pills.
Exactly.
And, she's like, well, I gave them to Griselda because she needs it because her ankle's hurt. And he's just like, well, you know, doing the whole angsty thing. Like, you don't love me. You just want me to be better. Or you prefer her over me. I just need the pills to be better.
Well, so she also said that, like, well, they need it
more than you do. You don't because he's just – I mean, he's trying to to overcome his drugs, but he's still using. That's why he's still snorting. He's still snorting his drugs.
Yeah. One of the things that's interesting though is because she's a very do whatever needs to be done, and I feel that and I've said this in the other ones that I feel that at one point getting rid of Nick might be what has to be done.
Eventually, yeah, but we don't know when. It's the appropriate time.
See, at the same time, it might be something. It's like what I said even with Travis is that something drastic is going to happen where that good nature side of him is going to turn. And I think at the same time with Nick, that might happen where something tragic would happen that would make him kick his drug habit, maybe even make it worse.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, we don't know.
No, that's true.
Well, I mean, he was the first one to announce that, hey, they're dead.
Yeah, you know? He was the first. I think he's a realist because he's seen – the most.
It. Yeah, he experienced it with his dealer.
He experienced it with the dealer. He experienced it at the church. In the first episode where he sees his girlfriend eat someone else, and then he runs out of the church. And then now he's seeing it again. I feel like he's becoming much more desensitized to what's going on quicker. Not just because he's like detoxing, but also because he's seen much more of it than anyone else.
Yeah, and he feels that drugs can actually help him be and pretty much kind of space everything out. But even though he knows it's going on, he's still trying to think of something else that will kind of not only push away from reality, but make it a different reality for him.
Like he needs a high.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's trying to be happy.
Justify it, pretty much.
Exactly. And then it was right after, like I said, right after they were leaving, the mom, which was Madison, she notices that the neighbor, the husband, has actually just came back from his trip.
Oh, yeah.
And she's trying
to. The one that they leave him in the backyard?
Exactly.
To an extent, I sort of hoped that guy would get eaten, the neighbor at the end.
Definitely.
Because I wanted that to be a trigger for Travis. And I almost felt that would have been a trigger for Travis to be like, okay, maybe the way I'm handling things isn't the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. So, again, with Fear the Walking Dead kind of steering away from expectations, it didn't do that. What it did do was bring out the military. I did not expect for someone to just come out of nowhere and shoot the zombie in the head.
Yeah.
Nope.
That was completely out of left field. And it makes the family go right back to where they were instead of like pushing with their plans.
Yeah, they'd get out and they just got pulled back right into the neighborhood. Actually, their own neighborhood. Yeah.
Their militarized neighborhood now.
Back into their quarantine zone.
Yeah, like it seems like the military is probably going neighborhood by neighborhood and trying to defuse situations. They were going around asking questions like, whose house is it? How many people are with you? Have you been bitten? Have you been around people that have been bitten? Of course, they lied.
Have you been exposed?
And then they even mentioned the Salazars, which were still in the house, right?
Yeah, they were still in the house.
So, they were in the room.
That's where it's at right now. They're back to square one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm liking? I'm like what I'm seeing with the military, and I would love for there to... Because, you know, in The Walking Dead, you see how society's fallen, and everywhere they go, some great catastrophe happened. I would love for, in Fear the Walking Dead, for them to really, almost like a fight back. And
get their talent back kind of thing?
Yeah, I want to see that a bit more. I want to see more of a fight between the survivors against the actual infected, and even the infection itself, have them actually try to do something.
I see something different. Because now that there is technically some sort of authority, but it's more of above the law authority since it's the military, I feel that it's going to be almost kind of slight of dictatorship because it's military.
Martial law.
Yeah, it's going to be martial law the whole entire time. Military is going to be there. They're going to defuse the situation how they feel it's going to be right. And then someone is probably going to say, that's not how you're supposed to do it.
And then probably get overthrown.
Exactly. They're going to try to get overthrown. And then guess what? It's going to cause another bigger conflict.
I mean, just think about every zombie movie, every zombie TV show or whatever. It's usually the military base is there. And then, like, you go past it because everyone thinks that's where you need to go. And there's nobody there. Something always happens. And that's probably the thing that happens.
Yeah, there's always survivors stranded.
One thing I did see was when they were marking the houses. Do you guys think that those houses are being marked for just termination in general?
No, those are actually being marked for how many survivors are in, how many are left dead.
Was there?
It's a usual protocol that a lot of firefighters use.
Really?
Yeah. If you ever go to any, like, I guess you could say, like, natural disaster places, like let's just say Hurricane Katrina, they usually mark it. I forget how it's done, but certain amount of people who are in, how many are alive or injured or need help. It's usually how it is.
That I didn't know about. That's actually very informative.
You're welcome.
But no, I do have a sense that the military will take a very a harsh approach because it is an epidemic and they are getting overrun. They don't have the luxury of time to really investigate and see what it is. They have to get in there and they're aware that it's an infection. Mm-hmm. Like they're aware that it's that having contact with them isn't positive, mm-hmm. but they never mentioned about bites or anything like that. The military themselves, when they were interviewing Travis, they never asked him about bites. So it seems like the greater authority doesn't know about that just yet.
Yeah, they just asked him if he was exposed to the virus.
Yeah. But it's nice seeing how fast-paced this series is. And even at the third episode, we're still comparing it to The Walking Dead, and I feel like that's not going to end.
Yeah.
But it is so much quicker in pace, and to me, even though there's not much happening, there's so much more suspense in this one because The Walking Dead has always been it's sit down drama and then action. The suspense doesn't factor into that equation. In Fear the Walking Dead, I feel that that's the biggest seller here. Like the suspense within like episode after episode and with the different scenes that take place from the church to the school to now the home, it's just suspense all the way through. And I'm interested in seeing where it goes next.
And you feel it. Like, I mean, when we're watching it all together, because we watched the episode together.
Yeah.
We're sitting there, and that's the quietest we are is when it's at the suspense parts, because you're like, whoa, 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 what's going to happen? Because, like we said, it's very unpredictable. And when they walk through the house that first time, we're like, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, nothing. But when she goes through that second time, we're like, oh.
Yeah.
Now, when she's running through and she's lost, you're like, whoa.
Feet, jump scare.
As soon as she sees the pills on the table, and then you hear that creaking of the door, like, oh, it's about to go down.
Yeah. It's pushing it to the limit, which is actually really good. That's really, it's
essentially what you want from a zombie show. And that's what I love about zombie horror. The fact that, there's two things. The fact that you can be overwhelmed and you have no other way to get out. Mm. But also on the flip side of that, the suspense of it, the fact that it's in your neighborhood, the fact that it's around the corner and you just don't know. It's in the shadows and you can't see it. And that's what Fear the Walking Dead brings out.
You can kind of relate to it to a sense.
Yeah. It's almost like the fear of the dark in people, but you know there's something in the dark. You just don't know if there happens to be something in that dark corner or in the other dark corner, but you know there's something there.
Yeah, and then what I really liked is the last words of the actual episode, which are said by the, I forgot what was his name.
Daniel.
What he said is like, oh, they're already too late. And we're trying to think of, and this is where I think we all may have a different opinion on that. Like, what does he mean that we're too late for, or what are they too late for?
Help.
Actually, that's a very good one. For me, it's already too late. When he says it, it helps come too late. Like they're mobilizing this personnel, and they're coming in to establish some sort of
order,
control and order, but it's not going to work anymore.
No, it's things have already gone to hell.
Yeah, and they just don't know it yet.
Yeah,
that's why I like Daniel. He's like, toughen up. We need to toughen up. That's what we have to do. Build what we have to do. Get the food. I mean, he hasn't brought up food yet, but teach your people how to survive.
Yeah, when he was teaching Chris how to use a shotgun, explaining to him the different parts of it, and Travis came in and he was like, I don't want you near that. It's like, I'm trying to...
You know how I feel about guns. Yeah, well, how do you feel about zombies?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was trying to teach him how to survive. He's telling him the more he knows, the safer he is, and he's like, well, you know how I feel about guns. It's like... Mm-hmm.
It's a different world now. And that's the thing Travis hasn't understood yet. I'm wondering and I'm waiting to see when he's going to see it.
And that's what I've been saying. It's like, I think something's going to trigger it. Something has to trigger it. Mm-hmm. Not, it can't just be like something very small. It has to be something big, family related, or something close to the group where maybe they just get really close. And that's the one that, you know.
The first one out of the group to die.
Exactly.
I said it before in a few other episodes. His family's gonna die. Maybe not Chris, but I feel Liza's gonna die.
She can't. She's pretty.
Someone in the family.
She's too pretty.
It doesn't matter which family. Someone will die.
Yeah,
I feel like it's her.
This is my 4-star episode out of my 5. 4 out of 5, definitely. I really liked it.
Mm. Really liked it. I've been solidly giving it a 4 every episode. This again is 4. I've loved it from the very beginning, from what I thought it was going to be to what it is now, mm-hmm. because this is essentially what I wanted the series to be. So for me, it's a 4-star.
I feel 4 as well on this one. It really started showing that it's pushing its potential to what it's going to be, and it's actually kind of triggering everybody's actual like predictions, and it's actually working too.
I'm still starting a pool on who's going to die for Travis to get it. I'm saying Liza. Nick. What about you, Josh? Out of Nick. 5?
What do you I would definitely give the episode a 4 just because it's so unpredictable. And at the same time, there's a lot of foreshadowing. If you really look at the episode, mm-hmm. you can just tell. And again, I'm going to say it again. It's just, you know, something has to happen to Travis and you're going to wait for it. Is that suspense? It might happen at the end of the season. We don't know. It might happen in the second season, third season, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Something's going to happen, and you're just there waiting for it to happen. And that I'm kind of hooked on it. Like I can't wait.
All right, listeners, let us know in the comments what you think will be Travis's trigger, because I think everyone has some sort of prediction, and you've already heard ours. Make sure to head on over to film-book.com for the first 2 episodes. And right there, you can go ahead and comment and let us know what you think. If you are listening to this on iTunes, go ahead and rate us and also let us know what you think of the episode there. We'll be back next week with the following episode and much more commentary on what Travis's trigger will be. All right, everyone, take it easy.
Good night.
Good night.
Letters.
Good night.